It's often said that Luke is thinking of the missionary movement. There's no doubt about this book is describing the missionary movement. And if he was aware of the difficulty of preaching to every nation under heaven in their own languages, Luke may have thought that it would be appropriate if God would facilitate this by providing a medium of communication, the kind of thing that the British and Foreign Bible Society is doing today, translating the message of God laboriously into 200 and odd different languages and adding a few new languages every year. Well, if all that Peter needed to do is to wait for the Holy Spirit to fall on him and then open his mouth, why, all these 250 nationalities could hear it done without benefit of printing press or all the terrific labor of first codifying some primitive language and then translating into it. It's bad enough to translate the Bible into the English that we know, but if you have to translate the Choctaw or whatever other languages there are, it's still worse. So that it may be that this frontispiece of the book of Acts was a kind of a vignette of a happy omen of the successful missionary reaching of the polyglot population of the world. I must find out whether my friends in the American Bible Society make much use of this passage. It might be helpful to them. I have no doubt they translate it into 250 languages, but that's very different from saying you don't have to translate it. Well, this story I've mentioned, it really isn't carried out, and my guess is that it didn't help the missionary movement much from that point of view. Though speaking with tongues in any way that seemed to be supernatural would have great missionary value in the ancient world, whether this kind or the kind that Paul had. Anything that seems so distinctively supernatural and divine would have its value. But I mention it primarily because it is a very clear case of the concretization of the Spirit in the view of this writer. I think we can see why some of the phenomena are used. He talks about fire and light. You remember there were tongues of fire and light. Fire and light are marks of the divine. They represent the most refined aspects of the material world. And then, of course, the word spirit itself is merely the word for wind or breath, so that you can see that wind and breath and fire and light are natural phenomena to connect with the spirit objectively. I want to ask you a question. If not as a missionary technique, why does the author of Acts give such prominence to the Spirit? He does.
Henry, would it be because this marked the obvious changing point in the lives of the persons involved?
Yes, I think he felt that. As I said, you had it and you didn't have it. It goes along with conversion, if you like. And I'm sure lots of people wish they were quite sure they'd been converted and would like to be able to put their finger on it and to have the concrete evidence. And so would their friends. And they got it. It was then as a mark, you're suggesting, that he believed it was a mark of something real. There's no doubt about that. If there's any one thing we know about the Spirit, it's this, that those that talk about it believe it corresponds to an actual experience, some kind, either internal or external. Nice thing to talk about on that account. There's no doubt about that. Well, what he wanted to show then was that Christianity represented a new phenomenon. Is that it? Coming one by one or in groups to people. I think the story of Jesus' baptism is rather interesting, don't you? Same writer tells us how the Spirit came down on Jesus on a given day, right there in the Jordan. And you know something was said to him there. This day have I adopted thee. And just as every Christian passes through a conversion process. Perhaps that's not the best thing the word to use, but it's something more than conversion. If I use change, it's the same word, isn't it? Every person goes through a crisis, and when that crisis comes, the Spirit is the seal, the mark, the external mark, the internal mark. The visible and intelligible and appreciable and perceptible mark of a change. You're thinking out of a change in persons rather than a change in an era. Was that right?
Yes. When this happened to you, it marked a change in your life, as an individual, in the way you live and acted.
Yes.
It's obvious to other people.
But don't you think that the Christians thought also that there hadn't been this kind of thing for many, many years past? And wasn't the whole church a brand new movement and the mark of the whole movement, not of the individuals only? The Holy Spirit began in history, or took a new beginning in history, in these days, wholesale and retail. More and more people getting it. Only in that attenuated use, looking back, way back in the past, did they think of it. In the good old days, the prophets did have it, and they spoke. They were inspired by God. But once again, now, said the authors of the New Testament, it has come to be in existence. There's another thing about the Spirit besides its calling attention to the present. It calls attention to the future. You may remember we're talking about three things together: the resurrection of Jesus, the Spirit, and the coming in the future. Now, the Spirit has a connection with both the others. It comes only after Jesus risen from the dead. Is that right? Aren't they told in Acts to wait a little while now and you'll be endued with power from on high? God will pour out the Holy Spirit. And aren't we told in that it couldn't come and didn't come till after Jesus had been raised? And then aren't we also told that, and isn't this also Jewish, that what had been in the good old days when the prophets did have the Spirit, when Moses could pray that his Spirit would be poured out on all the children of Israel and not merely on the 70 elders, aren't we told that in the last days we'll have it again? I admit that the author of Acts tampers a little bit with the prophecy of Joel. The book of Joel says it'll come to pass I never dare quote this since I heard it misquoted in Washington meeting when Mr. Hoover was there. The young women will see dreams and the young men will see young women. So I must read it carefully. This is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. It shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. And on my servants and on my handmaidens I'll pour out in those days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show wonders in heaven above and signs on the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before that great and notable day of the Lord shall come. And it come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved. That's what we call an apocalyptic passage, isn't it? And the author of the book of Acts, just to make perfectly clear, puts in the words, in the last days. That's not in Joel. But at any rate, it's perhaps a legitimate specification of what Joel means. In other words, the Holy Spirit, this Jewish view, in the time of Jesus, was something that they knew had been back in the classical time, and they knew would come in the golden age to come. But as far as the Jews were concerned, they didn't expect it now. No wonder they were taken aback when they saw what was happening on the day of Pentecost. And Peter asked to tell them, this is just exactly that thing which we are to have. So that it has for the Christian both a backward look and, I think more important, a future look. And is closely tied up with the subject of our next discussion. Well, is that the best and only answer to give to my question, why does the author of Acts make this prominent? Yes? A little louder,
At the close of our session last time, we were talking about the fact that they were sure that Jesus was the Messiah and so forth because the Spirit returned to them. And I was thinking of the fact that the Spirit then became...